Levitt Law Show. Good morning, good evening, and good night. I am yours truly, Attorney Todd L. Levitt. Nikki, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm fired up right now.
I can
now.
See that.
Aren't we always fired up?
Yes, we are.
After last week's show with Attorney Barton Morrison from Cannabis Legal Group, the response has been an avalanche like Niagara Falls. It has been, we always say this is the biggest show we've ever done. That was the biggest show, the most response we've ever had from listeners from not only in the state of Michigan, but all over the country and Australia.
That is great news.
And to follow up, we have another big show today because, one, Brandon McQueen, who I consider to be a good friend and a good friend of the show,
yep,
is joining us here in a moment. And Barton Morris Jr. is going to join us in the fourth segment to discuss what it means to be a CPL holder and apply or try to obtain a medical marijuana or caregiver status card.
Wow.
So we got a lot of response saying, hey, what about the CPL? I want to own a gun. I want to be a pistol owner and carry a permit, but I want to also be a card holder. There's a big conflict there. Brandon's going to touch on it a little bit. So, and next week we hope to have, and it's been confirmed, that House Representative Jeff Irwin out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, who I would say has been the leading advocate in the fight to legalize marijuana in the state of Michigan, and he is coming on the show next Sunday.
So that one's even going to be bigger than this one.
Well, I don't know. Having Brandon on is always a big show with Tyler,
yes,
you and
is.
I. But we are honored, truly honored to have Rep. Irwin on. And I'm from Metro Detroit, but I've been a big fan of his. And I'd vote for that guy if he ran for president.
Yes, he is a great guy.
So what a huge show.
Yes.
And listeners, if you're just tuning in for the first time.
What took you so long?
Okay, ready? All right, let's try that one again. And listeners, if you're just tuning in for the first time,
what took you so long?
Absolutely. And it is a fact, folks, that more people listen to this radio show and the station on the way to church than any other radio show and station anywhere in the continental United States.
There we go. They should.
Hey, before we start the show and bring Brandon on, our hearts, our everything about us goes out to the families and the loved ones of the men and women who perished in that terrorist attack at the Pulse in Orlando, Florida.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just sad.
Very sad.
Very sad. I want to make a statement.
Okay.
I think Israel has it right in the sense that, and I'm almost positive about this, if not, I'll look it up, but Israel allows its soldiers and its men and women in the military to carry their firearms with them when they're not on active duty. So,
really?
Yeah, I'm almost positive. I have friends in Israel, and I'm staying in touch with what's going on in the world. So in Israel, I'm pretty sure, folks, you know, you can carry, they're, I don't know if they're carrying Uzis, but anywhere you go in Israel, and I've seen it on TV, and I have friends who've told me this, there's military men and women off duty who are carrying their firearms because of the constant attack the state of Israel is under. I have no problem, men and women, that I would love to see, and this is a little out there, I have no problem with our men and women who are in the military when they come home, okay? And even some veterans, if they pass certain standards.
Right.
And who are not serving or reserves, to carry their arms, certain type of arms, anywhere and everywhere in this country. And I'm referring to churches and movie theaters and schools, although I'm for the Second Amendment big time, and I'm for being allowed to, you know, carry in these places to begin with.
Right.
But I'd like to see our men and women in military. I mean, that's what it's come to.
I know.
Carry their weapons and bring them home and have them out in public with them. I have no problem going to a movie or a theater or a concert or a ceremony, and two rows down, there's someone who's on, you know, leave sitting there with an AR. or an Uzi or, you know, what I mean. I'm not saying they carry Uzis, but you know what I'm referring
but
to.
Protection.
I know
yeah,
it's a little.
Definitely.
That's what Israel does.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's a deterrent. I don't think, I absolutely disagree that you shouldn't take away our arms. I think more people need to arm themselves. I'm going to take some flack for that.
Yeah.
And therefore, if these idiots, and I'm being kind because I don't want the FCC to come after us, but these idiots who think they can go into an establishment and just commit a massacre, if they knew that when they walk in there, someone's going to sit there with a 12-gauge shotgun, you know, and do what they're going to do, they may think twice.
Oh, definitely.
Now, some of them won't. They'll still do it.
Yes.
But, I mean, as a deterrent.
I agree with you.
So don't take our guns. You know,
yeah,
I say,
think I should be able to carry,
I say carry
I
more and yes. let the military, you know, when they're and veterans. I mean, I know some Vietnam veterans. I would love to see these men and women, but mostly men, you know, carry arms in public.
Well, yeah, they should be able to.
I'd feel a lot safer.
So would I.
I'm just saying. So that's I just wanted to go off on that.
There we go.
And Tyler's over here agreeing with me.
Yes, he is. Thumbs all right. up all the way.
Hey, Nikki, let's just bring Brandon. Brandon McQueen is on the show today, where he's going to be on the entire show today. So I want to introduce Brandon back to the show. Brandon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Todd. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, Brandon, it's always you're always so informative. And if you don't know who Brandon is, he's my friend, but there's a case out there, People v. McQueen. You can look it up. We're not going to repeat it because it's too important that he's here. Brandon, last week we had on the show attorney Barton Morris Jr., Cannabis Legal Group. He'll be on the show later today. And we discussed that the governor just signed legislation blocking the People's Initiative to put certain things on the ballot. Can you kind of discuss a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Constitution has provisions of doing a ballot initiative, collecting signatures for a petition. And in 1986, they finalized rules saying that any signatures that are over 180 days are not valid or considered stale unless you can go through this extremely laborsome process to prove that they were registered voters at the time they signed it. That process has been so laborsome, so burdensome, no one has tried to use it since they passed it. And I'm pretty sure that was 1986. Well, technology has gotten us to a place now where it wouldn't have been the hardest thing in the world. We would have got it done to validate those stale signatures now. And so the Michigan-led Senate, House, and now the governor passed a bill to take that provision out of there. So if the signature is older than 180 days, there is no way to validate it, period.
So to bring the listeners up to speed, up to par, if you're just tuning in, am I legalized?
Yes.
Okay.
No diet then.
No diet. So am I legalized? And by the way, I spoke to attorney Matt Abel, and he wants me to give the listeners an update. He's also coming on the show in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Very nice.
With together with separate, but also, you know, Representative Jeff Irwin. But so am I legalized gathered over what, 350,000 signatures?
Well, they gathered more than that. They gathered they gathered 348,000 signatures that they validated in-house on top of 50,000 or 100,000 that they threw out themselves before they even took
it. And this is a people's initiative, and this is what the people want, to get the issue of legalization of marijuana and other issues that go along with it on the ballot in November.
Correct.
And it was turned in to the government, and then a few days later or a week later, the governor signed this bill trying to block all this.
Right. And so most of the people I've talked to think because the signatures were turned in before he signed it, that this law now, the new law now, doesn't apply to us anyways. But even if it did, the Michigan Constitution says that you cannot enact a law with immediate effect without a supermajority of the House and Senate, and they only had a regular majority.
So attorney Matthew Abel from Michigan, you know who Matt is?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he's a friend. He actually sends his regards to you. Matt has been a leader of the movement to legalize marijuana ever since I've known him back in the 80s when I went to college with him at Central. His dad was actually the president of the university back then.
Small.
And Matt wants me to let the listeners know that, he's a big part of Am I Legalized, Matt is, mm-hmm. that there's a group of attorneys, including himself, who are preparing a big lawsuit against the state of Michigan because of what the governor signed and these other representatives and state senators. Now, you had something interesting. First, I feel, and I can't complain about this enough, that our House rep, okay, I never gave him permission to sign this bill, and he signed it. Did you?
No.
I never did. No. Nobody ever came to us and said, hey, guess what? Although there's 400-something signatures from citizens of the state of Michigan, I'm your elected official. I'm just going to block all this, and nothing's going to be on the ballot in November. And I want to bring Brandon on. I want to bring Tyler Webb, my senior law clerk, on here for a moment, because Tyler's got some information in regards to what he did all last week in an effort to invite individuals to come on the show. So, Tyler, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back. You know that. I love being back on this show. So last week, after the show, we found out about the citizen initiative being blocked for the upcoming election. I started to reach out to senators and state representatives across the state of Michigan to see, you know, why did they vote yes or why did they vote no, and what their thought process was on it. Because just like Todd said, I didn't give them permission. Todd didn't give them permission. So I contacted 15, 20, you know, a ton, and I didn't hear back from any of them. Some declined on the spot. However, Jeff Irwin contacted me immediately, and he was, I'm all about it, I'll come on. So Jeff Irwin, a little bit of information about him. He's in his third term as state representative in the 53rd district down near Ann Arbor. He was formerly the Washtenaw County commissioner for 11 years. And you know Irwin pretty well. You said you spoke with him before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's been a big part of the movement for years now.
And he, in his comments when he rejected the House bill for citizen initiatives, he actually spoke to what you kind of said, and he said, it's all about corporate interests nowadays, and that's what makes him so mad. It says it's nothing to do with citizens and what we want, but it's protecting bigger interests of other parties.
Yeah, that's some great information. It's really, Brandon, it's really disturbing that here's all these members of the House of Representatives and state senators, and we reached out to dozens, and they don't have the respect or the courtesy to contact a citizen back to explain why they voted against the People's Initiative.
Well, anybody who has heard me speak on your show before or heard any of my writings or anything that I've put out there knows that when it comes to the Medical Marijuana Act in particular, I am very vocal about the fact that the number one enemy has absolutely been Republicans, almost exactly down the party line. And so I've come up with a nickname for them. They're the authoritarian Republican regime of Michigan. They have no problem using any type of tyrannical tactics they need to leverage to get whatever they want to get.
Yeah, and I've always complained about our elected officials that, you know, but I just wanted us to contact them. And you know what? I had some hope. I really had a glimmer of hope that somebody would at least, out of courtesy, contact an attorney's office back who has a platform and a radio show to come on to explain to their constituents, including our state representative, who we called twice that never called us back, which is, and this guy's my friend, which is sort of disappointing. You know, it's just, it, nothing ever changes with elected officials.
What could they tell you? I mean, can you imagine being on their end and having to make that call? Like, I don't know what they could say to justify them doing
Well, here's the thing. I understand, but, you know, let me just say this before we go to break. What they could say is they're obviously the reasoning behind voting against the People's Initiative. Obviously, they're politicians, so they're never going to – look, I knew they wouldn't call us back. Can I just say that? And, I mean, but I had hope.
It would have been nice.
But we called our own state rep here out of Mount Pleasant twice. And you would at least think, and this guy's my friend who I practice law with, we'd at least get a call back from his office. I mean, I'm still the guy's friend. I still like the guy. Okay, but I just would have liked a call back from our state rep in regards to why he voted against the People's Initiative, and he's termed out.
Which the only reasonable excuse I've heard was the one that the governor gave, but it's still not reasonable anyways, which is that, well, this ensures that only the most important issues get on the ballot. If
that's for us to decide.
Right, but that's for us to decide. That's exactly where I was going with that, is the legislators shouldn't be the one deciding what's the important issues.
Hey, when we come back from break, we're going to continue talking to Brandon McQueen, Tyler Webb, and upcoming in the fourth segment, Attorney Barton Morris is joining us once again. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Todd L. Levitt Law Show. Hey, if you're just tuning in for the first time or the 10th time, hey, we appreciate it. On behalf of Nikki Morissette, myself, WUPS, and all our sponsors. Brandon, what a huge show. Thank you so much for being here. We're talking with Brandon McQueen. Brandon, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
And next week, another huge guest, State Representative Jeff Irwin out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, who I consider to be, as you said earlier in the show, Brandon, the number one advocate for legalization of marijuana. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
In the state of Michigan?
Absolutely.
This guy went to Lansing and did exactly what he said he would when he ran for office, and then some.
Well, yeah. So when all the rest of legislators in Lansing were doing what their party told them to do on both sides, Irwin was definitely the first one to do what the people wanted.
Hey, Tyler, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Representative Jeff Irwin, who's coming on the Todd L. Levitt Law Show next week from today?
Just a little bit more about Irwin so our listeners know how dedicated he is to us Michiganders. His number one cause seems to be other than the medical marijuana movement. Yeah, he likes to protect the Great Lakes. He doesn't want other states or other people taking our water, which is important. I know we've talked about that on this show before. Another thing, he's known generally, and I know, Brandon, you just spoke on this, he doesn't care what the party status is or what the status quo has been in the past. He wants to do what he thinks is right. It's the 21st century, and medical marijuana and marijuana being legalized is going to be a thing. And he recognizes that.
And he was the first to recognize that when it comes to legislators.
Yeah, absolutely. And after last week's show in which Attorney Barton Morris was on from Cannabis Legal Group, you can catch that show and all our shows on iTunes. It's a podcast. It's free. Podbean or SoundCloud. Attorney Barton Morris, by the way, is going to be joining us here in the fourth segment. And he's going to be talking about if you want to obtain a CPL and at the same time be a caregiver or medical marijuana cardholder, he's going to talk about all the legalities in relation to that. And Brandon, it's my understanding as well as yours that you have the federal government and the feds always, you know, you got the feds and the state and there's always a conflict, but the feds have this blanket statement that, you know, if you're a permit holder in your particular state and there's marijuana involved, legal or not, there's some issues there.
Right. So either the Justice Department or maybe Firearms, Tobacco, and Alcohol, one of them put out a memo within the last 3 to 5 years saying that, so the applications you fill out to get a gun, to get a pistol, CCW, they have a question. And the question has been on there for a while, from my understanding, which is, are you addicted to drugs or alcohol? And you're supposed to check that box if you are, and if you check that box, then you get denied the firearm. Well, their memo that they released said that if you live in a state and you are a cardholder and you use marijuana in any way, that you have to check that box, so therefore you would then be denied.
Yeah, and again, Attorney Barton Morris Jr. out of Cannabis Legal Group is going to be talking about that specific issue coming up in the show here in just a little while. So we're also honored to have him back on the show. You know, the thing that's really upsetting to me as a defense attorney, and I say this every week, number one, let me qualify this by saying I'm very pro-law enforcement. I will not come on this show and knock any men and women who put their lives on the line each and every day. And people, I'm a defense attorney saying that. But at the same time, and you know, there is such a vigorous attack or effort against the people in relation to anything and everything with marijuana. I mean, I can't begin to tell the listeners as a defense attorney, it makes me sad how many people get stopped or approached and they have less than a gram on them. It's just, or they're pulled over. I smell marijuana. I mean, just leave the people alone. Leave us alone. There's so many other crimes. We have people committing terrorist acts on our country. I would like to see our resources go to that rather than trying to, and I'm just going to say it, harass. Now, I'm not saying it's overtly harassing because, again, I support law enforcement and I would say for the most part they're doing their job, and it comes from, I'll say it, it comes from the men and women in Lansing. I blame the men and women in Lansing who won't return our phone calls. They're the lawmakers. They're telling the law enforcement officers what to do all the way down the line. So I blame Lansing.
Well, law enforcement officers are almost being put in an unfair spot.
Because I agree 100%.
In Lansing. And one thing that I've pointed out to people before is marijuana issues, they're the easiest issue, in my opinion, to point out, especially when we're talking about elected officials, corruption or ignorance. There's not a logical, reasonable argument for why marijuana should be illegal, but not alcohol or not some of these other substances. And so either they don't know, or, in my opinion, they're corrupt. They're not doing what is right. They have some other reason putting them in there. And look at it. Like I said, it's an unfair situation they've been put in. Down in Detroit, there's a federal case going on of police corruption involving marijuana and stealing people's property. There was that officer in Grand Rapids who got caught up making butter and friends, and then he got prosecuted. He ended up committing suicide. It's on a primetime TV show, I hear, the fact that the Michigan State Lab was, in some sense, falsifying tests.
Yeah, in fact, Barton Morris he's got a lot of information in relation to that, and we're going to ask him about that on the fourth segment. So you'll be here. Stay tuned for that, because he's actually taken some special courses in relation to these labs and the tests and the chemicals, so he can speak about that as well. It's just sad. And then you have the federal HIPAA laws, where you don't have to disclose to anyone what medication you're taking, but right. When it comes to medical marijuana, the hypocrisy is just enormous.
You know, Todd, I agree. I think it's ridiculous, especially in regards to marijuana, that we treat this medicine any different than any other type of medicine, where if you're going to give a doctor that went to school and give him authority to give out medication, then why are you going to question the fact that he thinks marijuana is the right answer versus some kind of prescription pill that's actually doing more harm? I mean, I've had plenty of family members that have gotten addicted to prescription pills, and that ends up costing them a lot more than smoking a joint or relaxing and, you know, doing a more natural type of medicine.
Well, and when it comes to the HIPAA laws, there's an issue that's going on across the state where does the police, do they get to know that you use medical marijuana when you go to try to purchase a firearm? And should it be revealed to them? For example, I have a buddy, absolutely, in Wademan, went to the CPL class they have out there, got a certificate, went and got his CPL. He was a cardholder. I have another buddy who's a cardholder down in Gratiot County who showed up to go get a hunting rifle last season. And when he went to buy it, the person put his name in the computer and they're like, sorry, this says you have a medical marijuana card. And the only theory we can come up with is when those two dispensaries got raided on 46, he had patient information and membership information. And we have no clue how these people got his information because the state can't reveal it to him.
It's just
Laura can't reveal it to him.
Yeah. And explain Laura to the listeners who may not be informed or knowledgeable what LARA is. LARA.
Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. It's a department in Lansing, and they give out licenses for health, and you know, if you're a caregiver or nurse, and they, I think maybe even like contractors and stuff, but they definitely have full control over licenses when it comes to the medical marijuana.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in for the first time, or you're just tuning in, we're speaking to Brandon McQueen, And my senior law clerk is on the show, Tyler Webb. Nikki Moore sets in the studio. Coming up on the last segment, attorney Barton Moore is from Cannabis Legal Group, is making his second appearance to talk about CPLs and that issue, Brandon, of applying for medical marijuana card and caregiver status. So Bart is going to be talking about that, which is huge. A lot of feedback on that. Also, next week on the show, the most amazing elected official in my lifetime, and I'm over 50, House of Representative Jeff Irwin. Hope it's not Jeffrey. I'll just say Jeff. So Jeff, because I have a lot of friends named Jeffrey, Jeff, but it's Jeff. Jeff Irwin out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, who you would describe, Brandon, as...
He's been the biggest supporter we've had in Lansing when it comes to patients' rights, caregivers' rights, or just trying to get the medical marijuana law passed. That's what's good for the people. He's been on our side.
And in regards to that initiative that, you know, MI Legalize and the men and women work so hard to gather those signatures, and then the governor signs this legislation, you know, trying to destroy that effort, and all these reps and senators signed on to it. Last week, we called dozens of them to give us explanations so we can provide that to the audience and or to come on the show. Either they declined on the spot, the majority, 99%, did not even return our phone calls. Our own state rep here in Mid-Michigan, who's my friend, that's why I'm not going to say his name, I'm sorry, he didn't even return our phone calls. So there's got to be a reason behind that, because he always returns my calls. But the point is, Jeff Irwin was the only one who contacted Tyler immediately to come on the show to provide the people information in regards to where this is all going. So that's huge.
Well, and so as much as I want to, you know, as much as I would like to make it up be all about marijuana issues, the truth is this affects every single voter initiative that comes down from here on out. Like, they just made it harder for the people to voice their opinion. I don't think we need it to be harder. If anything, we need it to be easier for the people to voice their opinion. And I would like to point out that the 180-day thing is actually uncommon. So if you go around the states, I think it's only around a third of them at most that have petition initiative language in their constitution that can even do this. And out of all of them that I've ever heard about, the only other one that has a strict 180-day limit is California. There are some that you can collect signatures for 3 years and they still are validated.
Yeah, and here's what's interesting, folks. If you don't understand what the people's initiative is, typically, you have a member of the House of Representatives who will introduce a bill, and it will go to committee, and they'll discuss it. And maybe they're influenced by money or self-interest constituents. You know, they're from Detroit, so they're looking out for Detroit, or they're from a small town or looking out for farmers' rights. But a House rep will introduce a bill. It will go to committee after committee after committee. Other House members will join and sign on to that bill. If it's a Republican brought forth a bill, the Democrats may oppose it and vice versa, but then it goes to the Senate, and then if it passes the House and Senate, the governor will sign it or veto it.
Right.
But a people's initiative is where the people get the signatures and place it on a ballot and circumvent and divert the House, the Senate, and the governor altogether. So what's happened here, the people of the state of Michigan have gathered, as you said, Brandon, 400,000 plus signatures. They turn them into Lansing, and a week later, we have 50-plus members of Congress trying to block all this and other initiatives to come in the future, and the governor signs it, and no one will return our phone calls to explain to the people, at least our listeners, why.
Well,
I never agreed to have my rep put his signature on that. I never even knew about this. Did you?
Well, and that's the thing, is when the Senate took it up, it was an emergency session or something like that. It wasn't one of those things where they put it out a month in advance and gave three or four notices, hey, we're taking up this bill. It was just popped up out of nowhere in the Senate, and then they passed it. They shot it over to the House, and I think it's actually worth mentioning that when it was in the House and it went to committee, the committee only approved it with the recommendation that it doesn't take effect until January 1st, 2017. And then when it went to the House, they never put that recommendation into effect.
We have to go to break, but when we come back, Tyler has some more information. And I also want to mention that I spoke to attorney Matt Abel, A-B-E-L, from MI Legalize. They're bringing forth a lawsuit against the state of Michigan on behalf of the people of the state of Michigan. And thank goodness for that. We'll go to break. We'll be right back with Brandon, Tyler, Nikki, and more. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Todd L. Levitt Law Show. This is Tyler bringing you back from break. We're going to continue to talk a little bit about the Citizen Initiative. I just want to talk a little bit about Jeff Irwin and what he had to say about it. I know we're bringing him on next week. Really excited for that. Jeff said, what we've seen today in the House of Representatives is the majority party deciding to change the rules. And he continues to say how the Republicans, which is the majority party, saw that there was a grassroots effort to make marijuana a real thing on the ballot in November, and they did not want that to happen. And I know that this will ruin a lot of other potential citizens' initiatives, but we're primarily focusing on the medical marijuana side of it. I don't know, Brandon, what do you think? I think that they strictly, you know, they saw that, you know, this is an opportunity for the Republicans to take a voice away from all Michiganders. And, you know, as Irwin said, this could be a deafening effect for future policies decisions in our state.
Well, absolutely. If you go and look back over the last few years, any of the years, I believe since the Medical Marijuana Act back in 2008, there's been somewhere near 6, maybe 10 voter initiatives that made it on the ballot, and 3 of them have passed. So if the people don't want the issue, they vote no on it. So why not give them the chance to vote? Why even stifle their chance to vote on the issue?
It seems awfully backwards to me that citizen initiatives, things that the people want, are going to be now not allowed to be brought forth on ballots because of this law. Whereas, you know, the law is created, you know, for the people, by the people. It's supposed to be about what the citizens want. And the men and women that we hire that are in Lansing working for us, you know, you would think that they would take into account the fact that, wow, 400,000 people view this as an important issue. But no, it's obviously not that important. If it was that important, we would be deciding that. Like, I don't know. That seems awfully pompous and arrogant to me.
It's authoritarian.
Yeah, it's really disappointing. And, you know, next week on the show, House Representative Jeff Irwin from Ann Arbor is joining us, Brandon. That's going to be a huge show. And if you're just tuning in and missed any part of the show, catch us on iTunes. It's free. You can go to our podcast. We have all our shows on there from about the best. We've been on for years, but we started doing it about 12 weeks ago, Nikki. We're also on Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N. And SoundCloud. It's all free. I believe it's all free. And we're trending pretty high, by the way, on iTunes. So that's kind of cool. That means that we're providing not just Michigan listeners, but listeners all over the country and world with positive and entertaining information. But to also, I want to repeat, our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the families and loved ones of the men and women who perished in that terrorist attack in Orlando, Florida. That's just, Brandon, that's just heart-wrenching.
It is. I mean, I don't even know. There's not much words to even express.
You know, it's so sad, and that's why I said in the first segment it might be controversial, but, you know, I want us to do what Israel does and allow our military, when they're on leave, to carry their weapons. They used to carry M16s. I know I'm a little outdated here. I'm not sure. But I have no problem with any, as long as they meet certain standards. But if they're active, they meet the standards. Carry in public, that's just my opinion, you know, to anywhere and everywhere. So to let these people know who want to commit these horrendous crimes, terrorist attacks, that you're not going to get away with it because you're going to be confronted by somebody who also has an automatic weapon and it's going to be pointed right at you.
I've been spending the last day or two debating people. I'm on a bunch of political groups online and stuff, and I think that I've come to my personal conclusion, which is I think one thing I would like people to know without trying to politicize this is that the guy was a trained mercenary, and he had license to carry automatic rifles, not AR-15s that are semi-automatic. He had license to carry fully automatic weapons. None of the reasonable gun laws that have been proposed lately would have done anything to prevent this. They would have had to have changed the laws that regulate private mercenaries.
But I got new. Look, we all know, I agree, Brandon, we all know that there's so many guns out there. If you try to take away our constitutional right to bear arms, the bad guys are going to have the guns anyway. It is what it is. But look, these thoughts and opinions of myself are mine only. They're not those of the station, my guest, the sponsors, Nikki, Brandon, Tyler. These are just my thoughts. That's just how I feel about things.
And on the other side of it, too, the guy was American. He was born in America. So no Muslim ban or any type of ban on terrorists would have prevented it either. So on both sides, people just need to calm down a little
bit. Here's the thing with the Muslim ban, okay? Let me just say this. And I'm typically an independent, but I'll just say this. I grew up in Metro Detroit. I grew up in a multicultural neighborhood. I played football with friends of mine from Albania who were Muslims. I had friends of mine from Indonesia who are Muslims. Okay, I spent time in these people's homes since I was a kid. Okay, I've met their relatives from Albania who are Muslim. All Muslims are not from the Middle East. There's Muslims in China,
right,
that are Asian. So my point is, you can't look. I agree with the radicalization thing. I'm not afraid to say that. But you can't just ban an entire right. religious group.
And even if you wanted to, it wouldn't have prevented anything in this situation. And so what is the answer then? Do we allow weapons in establishments that are serving alcohol? I don't know. Maybe we do. But I do think...
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah,
I
don't know that we don't. And so probably there'll be a learning curve of people using their weapons, pulling it out because they're drunk and angry, and they need to be prosecuted and made an example of, and hopefully eventually that will go away. And so that's one option. But I think in the meantime, if the government, whether it's a state or a federal government, is going to declare weapon-free zones, then I think they need to arm those zones with National Guards. Well, and then let the people see National Guards walking around with military rifles
well,
and how
I'm
they feel
well,
about
that's
that.
What that's what I'm saying. But here, Tyler wants to say something also, but here's what I want to say and add to that is that if the government's not going to allow citizens to carry arms into establishments where alcohol is served, then at least I would feel comfortable knowing that if I go to a bar or a club, that the owner or the management and some of the staff are heavily armed. That's what we've come to. That's what this country is at right now.
And another thing I just want to add, and I know it's out there, the Second Amendment's in there to protect ourselves from a tyrant government. So whenever the government's going to come and try and take our guns, they should remember that the reason that's in there in the first place is so they can't do that. So I agree that there are very extenuating circumstances. But, I mean, like you said, if I'm going to go to a school and I know that there's going to be armed guards there and stuff, it might make you think twice before, making that terrible decision,
No, I agree. And so... on one hand, I feel like let the people guard themselves because I don't like turning to my government for protection for anything. That doesn't feel right. So you say it's a gun-free zone. Well, the Constitution, the most important thing the government is supposed to do in the Constitution is protect me physically from violence.
Right.
And so if they take away my right to protect myself, then I think they need to step in and fill that. But it's a scary thought of government soldiers walking around gun-free
martial
zones.
Law.
I mean, look at that. Look how that looks like. Can you think of that visual?
It's totally unnecessary. If you look at countries like Switzerland and other places like that allow, all owners to have any type of gun. I mean, they have low crime rates there. I mean, arming law-abiding citizens with weapons and proper classes and those kind of things, there's nothing wrong. That's how you prevent these crimes. If you go to a club and you know that there's a possibility that someone there may stop you from doing it, it's a deterrent effect. And like you said, if the guy was a trained mercenary, all these proposed gun laws, taking away AR-15s or hunting rifles or, pistols, it's not going to change the fact that men or terrible people are going to do terrible things. Guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Exactly. That's a brilliant statement. And I also want to add to that, Tyler, I agree 100% with what you just said. It's the Cold War effect. And during the Cold War, I mean, Russia and our beautiful, amazing country were in this race with nuclear weapons, and nobody was going to fire against each other because of fear of annihilation. So my point is that if, certain establishments, as Tyler said, are armed and it will serve as a deterrent. And I have no problem, I've said it before, that if there's certain educators in certain schools and nobody needs to know who they are, that they are allowed to carry guns into the elementary, junior high, and high schools, and in case something happens in the schools. Let one or two or three individuals, nobody has to know who they are. They can be locked away. They can use fingerprint technology. But I would feel safer if I had to send my kids, who are now older, to a school, knowing that if something happened, there's someone in there who's going to come to their defense. That's just my opinion. And hey, listen, we have to go to break. Brandon, I want to thank you so much again. You'll be back on the show. You come back?
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me, Tyler.
Love having you, and always appreciate your time and all your knowledge and information. And Brandon, you yourself have done so much for the movement. And on behalf of all our listeners, they may not know who you are. A lot of them actually do know who you are. I thank you for everything you have done. Tyler, always my senior law clerk, you're amazing. I actually learned quite a bit from you as well.
I appreciate it, Todd. See you guys next week.
Yep, and coming up in the last segment here in just a few minutes is attorney Barton Morris Jr. to add to the conversation from Cannabis Legal Group. And next Sunday, House of Representatives Jeff Irwin out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. You do not want to miss that. If you missed any of this show, check us out on iTunes, Podbean, or SoundCloud. We'll be right back. Law Show. Nikki, what a huge show.
This is a huge show.
I once again want to thank Brandon McQueen for taking the time to be part of the show, as he always does, and hopefully will in the future.
Yes, definitely.
And also a big shout out to my senior law clerk, future lawyer with this firm, Tyler Webb, always adds to the show.
Yes, he does.
Last week, we had attorney Barton Morris on. We've been announcing it all during this show, so let's just bring him right back on the show. He's here for a second week in a row. Bart, welcome back to the show.
The legalities of having a permit to carry a concealed weapon and be a medical marijuana patient. I get this question all the time. It is very frequently asked, and it's understandably a little bit complicated. The reason being is that federal law has laws that are specific with respect to individuals being allowed to carry a weapon, and state law, and it conflicts a little bit. So let me start by saying this. Pursuant to Michigan law, it is completely permissible to be a caregiver or a patient and carry a concealed weapon. What is not permissible is being under the influence of marijuana and being in possession of a weapon. That is unlawful. You cannot be in possession of a weapon while under the influence of marijuana. But just because you're a caregiver, just because somebody's a patient, doesn't mean that they're under the influence. Now, secondly, with respect to an application to obtain a permit for a concealed weapon, this is a state permit. Only the state of Michigan authorizes these permits. It's not a federal government thing. So the state of Michigan, in authorizing a permit to carry a concealed weapon, they don't ask if you're a patient, a medical marijuana patient. But what they may ask is whether you're addicted to marijuana. The reason being is that federal law prohibits somebody, a person that is addicted to marijuana or addicted to any controlled substance, from being in possession of a firearm. So federal law prohibits not only persons addicted to marijuana or addicted to any other controlled substance, but they also prohibit felons, people that have been convicted of domestic violence, and certain other individuals that have been convicted of certain other crimes. That is the reason why the state of Michigan has on their application, are you addicted to marijuana or any controlled substance? Because they'll automatically deny you because you're in violation of federal law. So the question is, what should a medical marijuana patient check or answer in that to that question? Are you addicted to marijuana? And I would say the answer is this. First of all, what does addiction mean? It's a very subjective term. It's a very subjective question. And I, knowing that if a patient were to say yes to that question and knowing that they're going to be denied, it's reasonable for me to believe that a patient doesn't necessarily think that they're addicted to marijuana. And so I think it's permissible to answer no to that question. Similarly, if somebody thinks that just being a patient is being just addicted to marijuana, then I suppose if you answer yes, you're not going to be able to carry a concealed weapon. But I don't think that that's that's 100% necessary to answer that question. Also, people want to know whether a caregiver can grow marijuana and be in possession of a firearm. And the answer is yes. There's nothing wrong with being a caregiver growing marijuana within the parameters of the act and be in possession of a firearm, because you're not committing a felony. A caregiver can be a holder of a concealed weapons permit. And as long as they're not growing more marijuana or more plants than they're allowed to grow pursuant to the act, then they're not committing a felony. Now, as soon as a caregiver grows more than what they're permitted to grow or is in possession of more marijuana than they're permitted to be in possession of, which is 2.5 ounces for every patient. So let's say they have five patients or six, including themselves. They're allowed up to 15 ounces of usable marijuana, usable dried marijuana. And as soon as a caregiver has over the number of allowable plants or over the number or the amount of usable marijuana that they're permitted to have, and then they have a firearm, that's when it becomes unlawful, because now they're committing a felony. If you have more than the number of plants that you're allowed to have, you're in commission of a felony, that felony being manufacturing marijuana. And if you're in possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony, that is a serious offense called felony firearm. Being in possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. A conviction for that offense carries a mandatory 2-year prison sentence. And so people, I see it all the time, people grow more marijuana than they're allowed to grow, thinking that they're not going to get caught, thinking that nobody's going to be bothering them, and all of a sudden something happens and the police show up, and then all of a sudden there's a firearm in the home and anywhere in the home. It doesn't have to be near the grow. The firearm could be in an upstairs bedroom, even locked in a safe. As long as the individual, the caregiver, has access to that safe, they're constructively in possession of that firearm. So firearms and marijuana certainly is a touchy subject. It's something that needs to be scrutinized carefully by every individual involved, because being in violation just a little bit could cause significant problems.
Bart, again, thank you so much for being on the show. Folks, if you want to get a hold of attorney Barton Morris, you can look him up at CannabisLegalGroup.com. He's out of Royal Oak, Michigan. That's CannabisLegalGroup.com. Well, Nikki, that's all we have for this week, and I look forward to seeing you same place, same time next week. And, folks, have a happy, healthy Sunday afternoon. I hope you have a great weekend. I'm not just a litigator. Take us out. I'm an advocator.
The Todd L. Levitt Law Show is brought to you by Chad Melly Well Drilling in Rosebush, Clark Modular Homes in Mount Pleasant, Harrison Power Sports, and the Sour Apple Smoke Shop in Mount Pleasant, the best damn smoke shop around.